You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Yes, it's only Tuesday, I promise. It has been yet another barn burner of a week of news. We've got a bunch of news to talk about this afternoon and some great guests to do it with. Welcome, 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 one and all. I'm Maggie Dawn, your host this afternoon for the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-752-4842. That's the number to call or text if you want to participate in the discussion that we like to convene every afternoon right here on the day's news. And often I bring in fabulous guest co-hosts to help us all be a little bit smarter, to get other people's perspectives on the day, the week's, the month's news. And we've got one of those great guest co-hosts with me for the first hour of today's program. Her name is Angela Lang. You've heard her here before. She's the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities BLOC here in Milwaukee. Welcome back to the show, Angela. It's great to see you again.
You too, always. Thanks for having me.
Of course. There's a lot of news, and I'm just going to tease this out to everybody. It never ceases to amaze me that even news that seems very Milwaukee-focused, actually, I can almost always relate it back up to the national dialogue. And the national dialogue, the national news of the day, often relates right back down to what's happening, not just in Milwaukee or Madison, but all across the state. And indeed, one of those through lines often deals with budget priorities, and we're in the middle of two huge debates here in the state of Wisconsin as to our biennial budget, and of course, in Washington, D.C., as to the big, brutal bill and the Senate trying to get together some sort of their own version of it to try to put something onto the president's desk. The deadlines, the self-imposed deadline of before July 4th, looming large for Senate Republicans on the Hill. Now, everybody, keep your thinking caps on throughout today's show, because before we get through it, before I hit 6 o'clock, I promise you, I am going to stitch together in one big piece, one whole thing, literally every bit of news that we're going to talk about today. So we're going to start with the micro and kind of work out from there. So Angela, there was a bit of local news here in Milwaukee. There was a shooting of a police officer slightly less than 2 weeks ago here in Milwaukee. A 39-year-old man shot a police officer who was responding to a call. The police officer was not killed. And it garnered some attention. The mayor gave some comments in the aftermath of that shooting. Let's take a quick listen to Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson.
And so I'm disappointed that he was shot. And further, I'm disappointed that he was shot by a man who's 39 years old, for real? For real, 39 years old? You're too damn old to be shooting at police officers at 39 years old. You're too damn old. And worse, you got a 19-year-old kid with you while you're doing this? You're supposed to be a role model for this young man. You're supposed to be teaching him how to grow up to be a responsible adult. Yet the actions that you displayed are gonna land you in jail for I don't know how many years. You'll be in prison. You're going to be behind bars for I don't know how many years. That's the message that you're sending to young people. And it's not fair to the other kids who live in this neighborhood to have their neighborhood taped off like this because you want to be stupid out here with guns. You're too damn old, man. You're too old. Grow up. Stop.
I appreciate the mayor's words, and certainly everyone can identify individual responsibility for terrible, bad decisions, but that's never the whole story. And when we start to look and pivot from our response to violence and these appeals to individuals doing better, making better decisions, to me, it always raises the specter of, are we actually also talking about violence prevention and interventions? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get your take on both the mayor's comments and some of these broader ideas, Angela.
Yeah, I totally see where you're going with the show, because that's where I'm going in my head too.
Yep.
One thing I understand the mayor's comments and the mayor's frustrations and his sentiments for sure. But I will say, a gentle pushback and critique that I have is, when you're focused on the 39-year-old thing, you're too damn old. What I also hear is, I expect this from young people, but you, I'm disappointed by, which makes me feel like, are we just expecting this behavior from our young folks? Which then brings the conversation into things like the Kia boys or, young folks in the summertime and how, I feel like I'm a kid of the 90s. I was born in 89, but the 90s were, coming of age, right? And you think about all the, summer activities you had. There was a really robust, YMCA teen program that I was a part of. Same with the mayor. The mayor was a part of, YMCA programs as well. A lot of these programs for our young people don't exist anymore. And so when summer's out, we get mad that they're doing these things when we are failing our children because we are not investing into activities and preventative programs. And so for me, I think it's a bit of a hot take, but I think it's a little bit of nuance. When I've talked to folks, some other folks had a similar reaction that the focus being on this 39-year-old, I absolutely understand what he means of you should be an example and you should be a role model and saying, you're too damn old. Well, it almost implies like it's expected of our young people because we have taken all those resources and programs away, especially in the summertime.
Yeah. First of all, also as a child of the 90s, snaps to the 90s, very fun time to grow up. And I myself spent a lot of time in the summers when I was a teenager at the King Center and as well as the Boys and Girls Club in Sherman Park. I played a lot of what I'm going to call like loosely organized basketball with girls that I played on travel teams with all around the city. And we also had, I'm just going to say it, malls, right? Like kids used to get, like there was just many more robust and, frankly, frivolous things, but in safe spaces for kids to do and hang out. And again, one of the things that it just comes up to me in my mind so frequently is we talk about the exploding budgets for law enforcement. We talk about exploding budgets for our system of incarceration, right? And we are looking down, pardon the pun here, the double barrel of just that issue in the state's budget, right? Like looking at upwards of 800,000 per young person to incarcerate our children at Copper Lake and Lincoln Hills. Whereas our investments in public education in this state's biennial budget are nowhere near where they need to be. Also for things that address kids' mental health. Now, we're going to be joined, Angela and I, by Emily Miota. She is the communications director for Kids Forward. Kids Forward, working with the Annie M. Casey Foundation, has republished some of the Casey's Foundation's research into the racial disparities in outcomes for young people in the state of Wisconsin, which continuously are some of the widest gaps the country. So as I was looking at the data and preparing for Emily and the mayor's statement was looming large in my head, I was like, listen, it's not just about personal responsibility and anybody who wants to sell you that, it's just not the whole picture, right? And I know the mayor doesn't mean that. He was speaking out of an understood place of frustration.
Absolutely. Like, I get it. And it's just like, let's also talk about the root causes, right? I think there's a lot of times where it's always the emphasis. I've seen, you know, these situations where both the cop and somebody else was shot, but the focus is always on the cop. It's like we discard the other person who has a family who is also healing and grieving. And, you know, when you're putting out those messages, you know, sometimes kids see that and are like, well, if you already think I'm a screw up or a failure and, you know, you're already not investing in my future, I guess I'm just going to continue, you know, doing whatever I got to do, because the community, the adults, the village has turned its back on me.
And that prospect, again, when we think about what is in this, at least the cuts that Republicans have proposed to the biennial budget, Donald Trump's threat to close the Department of Education, we have to see these things of a whole. These are not individual events. These are not individualized questions coming down some conveyor belt of public policy. These are of an entirety, right? Whether we're talking about early childhood education and the fact that the Trump administration basically wants to gut the Head Start program, one of the highest return on investment of taxpayer dollars that our country has ever done in the education space, the defunding of the Department of Education, the defunding of childcare here in the state of Wisconsin, and of course, the defunding of public education led by Robin Voss and the MAGA regime here in the state. It is.
But these are the same people that, you know, say that they're pro-life.
Right. Make that
these are the same people.
I mean,
we're going to cut all the things that keep kids from, you know, thriving, but we're still going to claim that we're pro-life. Cool. Make it make sense to me. I don't understand.
That should be. We need some T-shirts. Make it make sense.
Make it make sense.
Make it make sense.
Especially folks, the next few years.
Indeed. Folks, we are joined this hour by Angela Lang. She is the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. She is my typical, usual, I think, bi-weekly. I look forward to it. I wonder if this week is the week that she's joining me as a co-host here on Tuesday afternoons on the Maggie Dawn Show. We've got coming up a discussion about some, I'm going to call it legislation that Robin Voss and other legislative Republican leaders here in the state of Wisconsin are trying to pass to create unfunded programs that will essentially deprive the governor of the ability to veto them. And again, just a little footnote for everybody, all of the things that we're going to talk about today all come back around and are of a whole, because we're going to touch state politics, we just touched Milwaukee politics, and we are certainly going to touch some national politics this afternoon, so don't go anywhere. In case you missed it, that legislation, which again, we're going to get into in just a moment, part of what Republicans have used to explain this was Tony Evers' veto in the last legislative cycle of Republican-proposed legislation to expend a huge chunk of dollars for PFAS remediation. Again, PFAS is this forever chemical that helped us enjoy our nonstick pans back in the day. And interestingly enough, again, that being used, I'm gonna say, as a pretext to try to box the governor in, deprive the governor of the ability to veto certain pieces of legislation. They're using that PFAS veto as an excuse for this program or this approach to the governor's veto. Again, he vetoed it because he thought they were creating an out for polluters under our state's Department of Natural Resources regulatory powers. And today, there was a major decision from the Wisconsin Supreme Court about PFAS. Angela and I discuss both of those major state news events when we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks, if you're trying to reach us on the phone lines or text lines, looks like we're experiencing a couple of technical problems. We're working to resolve those as quickly as possible, so just hang tight with us. 855-752-4842. Again, that's 855-752-4842. We're also working to get my co-host this first hour of the show, Angela Lang of Black leaders organizing communities back on the line as well. Before the break, I promised you some breaking news about the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Just today, a bit before noon today, the Wisconsin Supreme Court delivered a big win for environmentalists in their fight here in the state of Wisconsin over forever chemicals. The liberal-controlled court ruled that state regulators can force landowners to clean up emerging pollutants such as PFAS before they are officially designated as hazardous substances. PFAS are this group of chemicals, again, nonstick pans, stain-resistant carpeting, fire retardants, all that kind of stuff. In fact, many foams that were designated for use in fighting fires, specifically at airports, really difficult fires to point out, those also contained these category of chemicals referred to generically as PFAS or forever chemicals. These have been around for decades. They're all over our nation's air, water, and soil. Now, what led to this lawsuit was a dry cleaner in Oconomowoc who was testing or was ordered to test his groundwater for PFAS. The order came from the DNR, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. But the DNR couldn't tell the dry cleaner which compounds the dry cleaner needed to test for or what levels would be considered dangerous. Now, some of that is because the federal government has been incredibly slow to make those designations itself, leaving many states in a bind, despite the fact that PFAS is all over our communities. So the dry cleaner decided, alongside the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Association, which is basically one of the biggest lobbying groups in the state, to sue. And again, here the issue was before a chemical is designated, okay, designated as hazardous, can the DNR require landowners, business owners, to remediate? Again, the answer today from the Wisconsin Supreme Court is a yes. Justice Janet Protasiewicz said this, writing for the majority, quote, Wisconsin's spills law safeguards human health and the environment in real time by directly regulating parties responsible for a hazardous substance discharge. The DNR has explicit authority to enforce a threshold for reporting the discharge of hazardous substances. Now, here's this place where, as a pragmatist, as someone who wants to think about, hey, how are these laws going to work? As someone that wants businesses to succeed, but wants businesses to succeed responsibly in a way that doesn't create what us economists call negative externalities. That is negative impacts that we as a society have to pay for, whether directly or indirectly, that are not built into the price of the product that the business is creating. Here's my take on this. How does the dry cleaner do what the DNR is asking if he doesn't know what to test for or what levels are hazardous? I also think that it absolutely should be the case that the DNR should be able to require testing to do these things before certain compounds are designated as hazardous. What, do we have to wait until the federal government figures it out? We've got a body of federal legislation, or the entire administrative process within the DNR can address these particular compounds? What happens to the rest of us as we wait for that? If we have good evidence that a particular compound is hazardous to our health, we need to be able to ask businesses to stop, you know, putting it into the land. But the how matters here. We need to be able to permit businesses to assess whether or not their business model works given these sorts of environmental threats. So again, incredibly important here, this decision coming down today from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It, of course, then links up, as I mentioned before, to the rationale of Senate and, Assembly Republicans here in the state of Wisconsin for a set of bills this legislative session that they're proposing to get around the governor's veto. One of the rationales that was offered by Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemieux is that the reason that they're doing this to avoid the governor's veto is the governor's veto last legislative session of, again, the MAGA regime's proposed expenditure plan for these PFAS remediation monies that, in the governor's view and many view and the view of many environmentalists here in the state, actually created a loophole for businesses to get out of their responsibility for remediation, for testing, and reporting to the DNR. So that was the dispute there. Again, this is according to reporting by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They write this: Republican lawmakers are passing bills this legislative session that create new programs that typically would be included in the state budget without funding, remember this, without funding to carry them out in an attempt to avoid the governor's partial veto authority. The question is, are Republicans looking for the credit, but none of the responsibility for figuring out how to pay for things? And by the way, I worked in local government for a long time. We call these things from the state unfunded mandates. Are Republicans just trying to shift the burden of responsible government off the state budget and onto local governments? We're going to have a guest to talk about that very thing. But coming up next, we have got the communications director from Kid Forward here in Wisconsin. We're going to talk. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us, and happy Tuesday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine guest for the next half hour to talk about some of the challenging disparities that we see between Black and brown kids here in Wisconsin and white kids. Her name is Emily Miata. She is the communications director for Kids Forward here in Wisconsin, an advocacy group for children here in Wisconsin. It's a pleasure to have you, Emily. Thanks for making time.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this data analysis, which is funded and organized through the Annie E. Casey Foundation, tell us what the Kids Count data analysis is. And folks, if you want to go find the Annie E. Casey and Kids Forward 2025 Kids Count Data Book, you can go to aecf.org/databook. That's aecf.org/databook. Of course, we'll have that website in our show notes for today's program. But Emily, tell us what it is and how did this come about? What are we trying to measure here?
Sure, absolutely. So the 2025 Kids Count Data Book is a 50-state report of recent data developed by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and we're co-releasing it with them. And it really analyzes overall, big picture, how kids are faring in post-pandemic America. It has collected and analyzed 16 different indicators across health, education, community, overall wellness. And it helps to essentially provide a score to each state. This year, Wisconsin is ranked 11th overall when it comes to overall well-being for children and their families across the country. Now, that sounds like a wonderful number. Obviously, out of 50, could be a lot worse. But the story here really is, especially in Wisconsin, we have disaggregated data. So the data that helps to inform this report. And that data, like you said, when we divide it out based upon race, we see that the racial disparities in Wisconsin, so we're specifically talking about the gap in outcomes between Black children and white children in our state. For many of the 16 indicators, we have some of the largest gaps in the country. And we know this because, thankfully, we do have disaggregated data. That's another another thing we're focusing on is highlighting a lot of the recent federal attacks that we've seen on the mere existence of data for specific racial and ethnic groups. Of course, it's being driven by a lot of harmful narratives on the federal level that center whiteness. But here in Wisconsin, again, you see the 11th place ranking for the data book, but that does not tell the full story. You really have to see the disaggregated data to dive a little bit deeper, and I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, again, these are 16 factors across a number of broad categories. Again, economic well-being, education, health, and family and community factors. So it's quite broad. And again, that 11th place ranking belies the fact that Wisconsin continues to be amongst the worst states in the country when it comes to that disparity between how our Black and brown kids are doing and white kids here in this state. Can you tell us a little bit, Emily, about some of those most striking disparities?
Yeah, absolutely. So we focused on six of the 15 data book indicators for which we have disaggregated data available. One of the indicators is childhood obesity, and we actually don't have disaggregated data available. But for six of the ones where we do, Wisconsin is either leading in those disparities between Black and white children, or they're some of the largest in the country. So the first one, for example, low birth weight. So as you can probably imagine, babies with a low birth weight have a higher probability of experiencing developmental problems, short and long-term disabilities. And, you know, many factors play into that. Things like, you know, the parents' multiple births, obesity, poor nutrition, poverty, smoking, stress, violence, unhealthy environments. A lot of these things, you know, that we think about when we're going to have kids. And the disparity in the birth weight between Black and white children, so 16.6% of children, Black children in Wisconsin, are born with a low birth weight, less than 5.5 pounds, but only 6.5% of white children are born with that low birth weight. This is the largest disparity in the country for any other, for any state. So, of course, this is a huge problem and one of the main things we're highlighting. Another one revolves around education. So another place where we have the largest disparity between Black children and white children in the country is high school students not graduating on time. So 29% of Black children versus 6% of white children don't graduate on time. And again, that's the largest disparity. That 23% difference is the largest disparity in the country. As you can imagine, obviously, a high school diploma is really critical for entering the workforce. Students who graduate on time are able, you know, have more opportunity to make, you know, better choices in their young adulthood. They're more likely to pursue secondary education and training, make healthier decisions, engage in less risky behaviors. So another really important factor. A couple other ones just to touch on kind of more quickly. Eighth grade math scores. Again, we have the largest gap in the country, the largest disparity in the country. 93% of Black children versus 55% of white children are not scoring proficiently when it comes to their math scores. A couple other areas to note as well. Child and teen deaths. So we actually see 79 deaths per 100,000 Black children versus 24 deaths per 100,000 white children. The second largest disparity in the country behind Kansas. We also see a large disparity in children living in families with a high housing cost burden. So 44% of Black children versus 16% of white children. The second largest disparity in the country behind Arkansas. And one other thing that's really important, and I probably should have brought up earlier too, as we're talking about disparities, especially on the state level, you know, it's important to be able to visualize what this looks like more broadly, right? So if you walk across the, you know, border into Minnesota or walk across the border into Illinois, you will not see that same sort of gap. So it's really important to put this into that context of this isn't about personal individual choices or individual failings, right? We can sort of easily fall into these really racist stereotypes and paradigms. This is about on a state level, state by state, how people are faring based on the barriers and the opportunities that our state policy choices have, you know, and how they impact children and families across Wisconsin. So those are just a few of the things to highlight.
Emily, as you were talking, there are, of course, I think that point deserves so much emphasis. You look at Michigan, you look at Minnesota, you look at Illinois, you look at Pennsylvania, you look, pick your analogous state in the Midwest, and we are worse. You want to pick Indiana, you want to pick Ohio, we are worse, which means what is different here? It requires some humility and some bravery to say this is an unacceptable disparity. And historically, we can talk about so many factors, so many policy decisions that occurred here in Wisconsin. And many of these things happened in other states as well. But the acuteness of some of these policy decisions and their impact, their historical and legacy impact today in the state of Wisconsin is unique and stands alone. To name just one, redlining in the state of Wisconsin was so brutally effective that to this day, folks, if you're not from the Milwaukee area, come on down. It is a beautiful city. You will have a wonderful time. It's one of the best places, least expensive, safest, easily accessed places in the country, in my opinion. But being a native Milwaukeean, boy, I can tell you exactly where the red lines were, and I knew that when I was a youngster without knowing the term redlining, because those same distinctions, those same lines that were drawn by the federal government to define who could access basically affordable federal government subsidized home ownership, right, we're so specific in Milwaukee. Their legacy lasts to today. We can talk about sundown towns. We've got Reggie Jackson, one of the most knowledgeable historians about these matters, joining our program. If not this week, I think sometime next week, Reggie's coming. So we'll talk about this. But two of these factors directly reflect that. Everything else is a consequence of these decisions, right? And the two factors that I think directly reflect specifically very active, very specific, racially based housing discrimination in the state. Our children living in families with how high housing cost burden, that's 44% of Black children versus 16% of white children, and children living in high poverty areas in the state, 30% of Black children versus 1% of white children. Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got our fabulous guest for this half hour, Emily Miata. She is the communications director for a Wisconsin organization that I am so happy and relieved is here to help advocate for kids in Wisconsin. The name of that organization is Kids Forward. We're discussing this half hour, the 2025 Kids Count data analysis done in conjunction between Kids Forward and the Annie E. Casey Foundation, exploring racial disparities in outcomes for our kids, all of our kids here in the state of Wisconsin. We're working to get Angela Lang, Executive Director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, back. What I think, and I bet everybody out there is saying to themselves as they're listening to us, Emily, is, well, what the heck are we going to do about this? How do we address these disparities? And Kids Forward has been thinking about that, and boy, do we have some opportunities to do just that in our state's biennial budget. Tell us more.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. You're right on. The state budget is the single greatest opportunity that we have this year to make an impact on some of these disparities. Obviously, they're right in the midst of a number of negotiations, some going better than others. I know you've been covering that, doing a great job of covering that for several weeks now. There are so many important opportunities within the state budget, and folks at home can go to kidsforward.org to see our full analysis of all of the different opportunities in which a state budget can either hurt or help communities, in particular communities of color, but also rural communities, across the state. Racism hurts everyone. Structural racism hurts everyone. So
we're going to talk. I got to hop in because we got to take care of some business. But don't worry, we're going to continue this great discussion on the other side. Do you have questions or comments? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. We got Emily Miata of Kids Forward. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. How do we address the disparities? Up next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us, and happy Tuesday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. That's the number to call if you'd like to join this discussion of real news that is about data analysis, that is about the disparities that we see in this state, which are basically top of the heap in many critical categories, disparities between outcomes, the overall wellness of Black kids and brown kids in this state and white kids. It's something that we all need to accept, acknowledge, and then do something about. And what you can do is call your state senators and your state assembly persons and tell them to fund certain things in this biennial budget. We've got a great guest this afternoon helping us understand all of it. Her name is Emily Miata. She's the communications director for Kids Forward, an incredible organization that advocates for all kids here in the state of Wisconsin. I also want to give my apologies to Angela Lang, executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities based in Milwaukee. We weren't able to get Angela back on the show. Angela, you know that Emily and I love you and appreciate you, and I'm so sorry that you couldn't be here for this critical discussion. Emily, we were talking about a few of the things, specific items that need to be addressed in this biennial budget if we're serious about addressing these disparities. And again, folks, if you're just joining us, this isn't about people's personal choices. We can look at comparable states like Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, just to name a few. And their disparities are nowhere near what we've got in Wisconsin. So we've got some soul searching to do. And the way that we express our values in democracies is through budgets. So Emily, tell us the specific things that if people are listening, they should pick up the phone, call their assembly person, their senate, their state senator, and say, do better on these items. Tell us what they are.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, just as a reminder, folks can find all of this information at kidsforward.org. We do a much deeper dive and a deeper analysis on all of these issues. We have highlighted a couple of places to start. Now, again, you know, this, it's not the sexiest soundbite to say that, you know, this is all deeply complex and we can't, you know, sort of dwindle it down into one thing, but that is the truth, right? This is meant to be a start, and some of the immediate things that we think would go really far here in Wisconsin and especially in this budget. So a couple of those things include one of the ones that I hear most talked about most often is extending postpartum coverage for 12 months. For those that are enrolled in Badger Care. For those that don't know, Wisconsin is only one of two states that does not provide postpartum coverage. So after women give birth, that, you know, they're able to actually continue receiving health coverage through Badger Care. This is so critical because, you know, throughout that 12 months, you can have all sorts of severe complications, and folks that maybe are higher risk, you won't see that in those first few months after giving birth. So that is one really critical, important thing. That is one area where we do see some of the, in addition to these other racial disparities that we talked about, that is an area where we also have pretty egregious racial disparities, some of the worst in the country between Black women and white women. So that's one area. The other area is, of course, expanding access to treatment for children exposed to elevated blood levels. Of course, you know, this is a critical issue, and you know, we've seen some pretty tragic cuts on the federal level around this. I'm sure you've talked about.
I mean, let's be specific. When we talk about lead remediation, lead testing, the impacts on kids, the city of Milwaukee asked the Federal Department of Health and Human Services to help them analyze their data to try to triage what to do and where to do it first within the Milwaukee public school system. Oh, sorry, that program within DHHS has been defunded. Mm-hmm. Absolute abomination no solution from MAGA Republicans here in the state, in our state's budget. Get on the phone, call them, tell them to address lead remediation. Sorry to pop in there, no, Emily, but it's insane.
That emphasis is so important. Absolutely, 100%. It's ridiculous. So yeah, that's another big one. You know, the other big one, of course, and, you know, to bring it to the, you know, trillion-dollar elephant in the room, Medicaid is a huge, I mean, Medicaid is a lifeline, yes, for 1 in 3 children in this state. And it, Medicaid funds account for more than 1 out of every $4 that make up the state's nearly $50 million, or sorry, billion dollar budget. So
yeah, that's incredible. I just want to speed you along, because I want to emphasize these two other elements that are so critical. One, and I'm going to group two together. Special education funding. Mm-hmm. Please push that with your state senators and assembly persons, and of course, school-based mental health. The GOP, the MAGA regime's approach to public education funding, specifically kids' mental health through public schools, is abysmal in this state. And last, but certainly not least, we need to be taking a much more comprehensive approach to violence prevention for our young people. We're not doing that. Get on the horns, find all of this information. What's the website again, Emily?
Kidsforward.org.
Kidsforward.org. Her name is Emily Miata. Go to kidsforward.org to find all of this incredible information. Big thanks to Kids Forward and the Annie E. Casey Foundation for their Kids Count 2025 study. When we come back, I'll be joined by Nick Ramos of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, talking about the pernicious impacts of money and politics here, as the Washington Post is reporting that the very balance of the House of Representatives will be decided here in Wisconsin in 2026. Stay tuned. It's the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.